Go ahead and try now.
All right, okay, there they, okay, you hit speak.
So everybody has to hit speak when they're talking.
We're ready when you are.
Good evening, and Happy New Year. This is the January 2016 meeting of the Health Commission, and this meeting is now called to order. First order of business is the approval of the minutes from our last two meetings, the approval of the November 19th and the December 14th. Minutes were sent out. Are there any corrections or additions to the November 9th minutes? Okay, there being none, then the minutes are approved as mailed out and will be published on our website. Are there any additions or corrections to the December 14th minutes? Okay, there being none, the minutes stand and will be published on the website. So the next order of business is public comment. If there's anyone here who would like to make a comment of 3 minutes on an item that is not on the agenda, this is the time to do so. Thank you. Please state your name.
Yeah, my name is David Kilburn. I'm the executive director of the Access Support Network, formerly the AIDS Support Network and Slow Hep C Project. I want to give you all just sort of an update on what's happening after 31 years of us being in our community as a nonprofit. We recently found out that the AIDS service organization in Monterey County was closing its doors after 31 years. We had about a month's notice to try to take action on that. Let's fast forward to now. We have two offices now in Monterey County and are providing services up there, as we've done here for 30-some years. So that was sort of a big milestone for us, and it just sort of shows the strength of our community in supporting us over these years to put us in a position to be able to do that. Felt good. It was the right thing to do. But on a other note right now, we have also been, the AIDS Support Network and Slow Hep C Project, we started hepatitis C services about 15 or 16 years ago, sort of innovative in the state. Not a lot of nonprofits were working with hepatitis C. We were fortunate just this last month to submit an application to the California Department of Public Health to do a hepatitis C testing and linkage to care proposal. Highly competitive proposal. There were going to be 4 to 5 grants funded in the state. We were chosen as one of those that are funded. So this is a 3-year demonstration project that we will be providing increased hepatitis C testing and outreach and linkage to care. So it's basically the model we've been using for 15 years here and just expanding it into Monterey County and expanding it here in our community. So I thought it was relevant to bring that to your attention to show that we're sort of on the vanguard now as one of the leading agencies in the state right now addressing hepatitis C. So I look forward to bringing results of that in the next 3 years back to you and letting you know how we're doing on that. But I think our community is lacking the knowledge of hepatitis C, and the fact that we're all baby boomers. We're all baby boomers here, and the baby boomers are at a huge risk, not by behavioral issues, it's just the majority of people living with hepatitis C are in our age group, and we really need to reach those people to get them tested. We have incredible treatments now that we've been waiting for many years. We can be actually curing people in as short as 12 weeks now with a single pill regimen. And previous treatments for hepatitis C were basically interferon and really difficult. It would actually disable people often doing the treatment alone. So it's exciting times. We're on the forefront, and I look forward to bringing you back information as we progress.
Thank you very much. We will look forward to hearing from you. And congratulations. All right. Next item on the agenda is our program, and Mary Jean Sage is going to introduce our first speaker.
So this evening, our topic is, among other things, transportation. Recently at the Healthy Communities meeting, we had someone from SLOCOG come and tell us about some of the issues and concerns about transportation. I think when we all typically think of transportation, we think about road repairs or lack thereof. But there's so much more involved in that. Walkability, bikeability, parks, all kinds of things. So I've asked someone from SLOCOG to be with us here again this evening to help educate us about some of the issues and concerns and some of what they do. So I'm happy to introduce you to Jim DeCarli, who is Executive Director of SLOCOG. And of course, SLOCOG is a San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. So Jim, the mic is yours.
So are we up? Hi, I'm Ron DeCarli. So I'm the Executive Director of the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, and that's all really fine. It's really a pleasure, real pleasure to come here and make a short presentation to you. Kind of the focus is we're doing a series of presentations around the county, and we're identifying what are some of the key transportation-related issues. Part of my purpose of coming here, too, besides the request, was there's a lot of things that we do that's probably important to this commission. So what I'll be doing is doing a quick, brief presentation on what our agency is, who we are, kind of the types of programs we have, some of our big challenges and some of our big efforts that we're underway right now, and giving you an opportunity to provide some input. So with that, who we are. We're a council of governments, we're a regional agency, separate from the county. We have our separate budget, we have a separate board of directors. The board of directors is the five members of the county board of supervisors and an elected official of each of the jurisdictions. We have separate budgets funded with state, federal, and local money. These are some of the major programs that we have, transportation planning and coordination. Prepare strategic plans and build consensus around those plans. Most importantly to a lot of people is programming state and federal funds. And we're programming money that goes out to the transit systems, as well as to each of the seven cities, as well as Caltrans. And then we also have the rideshare program and a 511 information system and an emergency call box program. But in terms of on the planning side, this is probably one part that we've worked with your staff closely in the past. And that was helping to develop more healthy communities and more walkable communities, maximizing mobility choice. Those have been some major efforts that we've integrated into our long-range transportation plan. But prior to that plan, there's a lot of other plans that go into that document. What you see here is US 101 study. We've done corridor studies on every highway. The Highway 101 study says we've got problems on 101, major congestion problems. We don't have the money to fix it, $1 billion, $750 million to $1 billion to widen the six lanes. We do not have that kind of funding at all. But what we can do is start reducing some of the demand through ride sharing, through buses, through a better use of the localized system and operational improvements. That's been our really forefront we've been working on. We also get involved in trying to create more walkable communities, trying to enhance downtowns for economic development. Good examples of that, Rio Grande Village, Cambria Village, Grover Beach on Grand Avenue as examples, and Tascadero up by the Carlton, where we've done street enhancement projects, and it's helped redevelop those areas. So we do street enhancement plans to encourage walking. Bike and corridor plans. We've been involved in practically every bike project in our county since the 80s. We've created class 2 bike lanes. We help fund the Bob Jones bike path. And right now we have corridor plans in every single area. We have bike element plans that we've been working with all your jurisdictions on. Every single jurisdiction now has a bike element. Every jurisdiction now has updated circulation elements that's working on biking and walking, more healthy communities. So this are really some big advantages we have. The corridor plans, Salinas River Corridor, the Coastal Trail Plan, the Bob Jones City to Sea Plan, a new one right now for public review is San Luis Obispo to Edna to Pismo Beach Trail Network. So those are all concepts that we're looking at. But we also get involved with transit. Everything dealing with transit, we help fund those transit systems. And all of those policies we integrate into a long-range transportation vision called the Regional Transportation Plan. We also program money. So what you see on the map on the right, which is absolutely undecipherable, is all different types of projects that we had that we programmed in 13-14. There was $29 million. It went for highway projects, bike and pedestrian projects, downtown street enhancement projects, and project development, in that case, doing the environmental work, the initial engineering, primarily for Highway 101 South County, some of the highway projects. We program that money every 2 years. And $29 million is probably typically what we've been programming. And these are the kinds of projects that we've been funding. In 2015-16, as a result of deterioration at the state and federal level, we had no dedicated highway funds at all. We had $6 million available to program, $29 million to six. And again, this is money going to the seven cities and the county and Caltrans for betterments. And we've had no new carryover funds, so to speak. So this might give you a general idea on the kind of funding we've had. There's been a shift in revenue source, the same amount of money deteriorated with escalation of projects and inflation, but the locals have taken more and more funding. We've had to start asking the cities and the counties if they want big projects to start charging higher development fees for those projects. Cities and counties are now spending more and more of their money on transportation revenues that used to be paid for by state and federal government. This is a general idea of some of the costs versus need. This is for highway projects. In 2000, we were programming $30 million a year. And by 2015, it dropped to zero. This is for interchange improvements, for instance. This doesn't count for Caltrans doing maintenance operations. It doesn't count for the Highway 46 widening. It's kind of extraordinary. But this is the kind of thing that counts various interchange. This is, on the right side, is Los Sosos Valley Road Interchange. The cost of that interchange in 2000 for construction was $10 million, and things increase in costs. At the same time, our revenue specifically for highways is going down. The culprit behind that is the gas tax. The gas tax was last raised in 1993. It was a straight dollar amount per gallon, and frankly, cars have gotten a lot more efficient. We now have electric cars that don't pay anything, and the net result is we have a revenue source that's deteriorating dramatically. A big concern raised by all the cities and counties, the street and road maintenance. How do we maintain our system? We also track this working with all our jurisdictions, and you'll see where you 70-72, this is called a pavement management index. It identifies that those jurisdictions are doing a pretty good job at funding. The key decision point, if anything is below 60, the problem starts deteriorating dramatically and the costs go up exponentially to fix these roads. That is the problem that we have in Grover Beach. That is the problem that the city of Atascadero has. That is the problem that the county has now, where the need to, just like fixing a leak on your house. If you fix it readily, it could be no problem. But if you let it go and let it go, next thing you know, you need an entire roof, and that's what's happening to our road system. So in the queue, various interchange connections throughout our region, every single jurisdiction has some interchanges. They're all $15 to $45 million. We also have various corridors we're working on, 227 south of the airport, Highway 101, Pismo Beach, Shell Beach Road. Auxiliary lanes or short on and off ramps that kind of provide operational support. Various interchanges throughout the region. Again, every jurisdiction has some interchanges. And then our transit systems, all needing improvement. These are probably some of the more projects that this commission has an interest in. These are the community enhancements. These are the bike projects, the safe routes to school projects that we're working on with every single city. With every single school district and every single school. Open space preservation, sidewalk, ADA closures, downtown street enhancements. On all that list of projects, on the left side are projects in the queue that we're doing environmental work, we're doing engineering work, we're doing various levels at a time when our funding is starting to go. We now have broad public support. We have broad elected official support on all these various issues. And our funding is largely starting to collapse. I mentioned that we program money every 2 years. So in the last 2 years, we programmed $6 million. That was not for any, we didn't have any money anymore for highways. And what we found was our other remaining funding that we used to put in for bike enhancements, downtown street enhancements, we're now putting towards highway interchange. We're putting them towards 227 highway, towards 101 as high priority projects to keep those projects going. And it's at a cost of some of these other enhancement projects, and it's the cost of what we've been looking at of trying to create more healthy communities and healthy jurisdictions. So we're seeing a shift in our funding going from multimodal to highways to address some of these really big issues. There's been a lot of legislation going on. You may have heard it. Congress just passed a big transportation bill. It's a good bill. Provides 5 years of funding. For us, status quo funding. Doesn't really show much increase in funding. So that's not addressing our problem. At the state level, the governor just mentioned that, you know, a major transportation funding package. Various legislators have talked about transportation revenue. This past year, there's been a whole host of different legislative proposals being considered by the governor, by the Democratic Party, by the Republican Party, and various legislators. Unfortunately, every single one of those are all focusing on, let's maintain the system we have. Fix it first. Maintenance and rehabilitation is not providing the kinds of funding that we used to have, that we've been funding these other projects. So where do we stand now? We can continue to rely on state and federal funding. The net result of that, as we see it, is increasing congestion. We'll defer big improvements. We'll continue to apply for competitive grants. In those cases, it's primarily transit and what's called active transportation, bike and pedestrians. But now we're competing against Los Angeles, San Francisco, San Diego, the big urban areas. San Luis Obispo City was very successful in their second application, and they secured $5.5 million towards a railroad safety trail. So it's one of those real success stories. But we have a lot of these projects in the queue. It also takes 10 to 15 years to build up some of the big projects, like an interchange project, again, like the Los Osos Valley Road. The net result, instead of having a broad, comprehensive package where we're maximizing mobility choices for all users of the system, which is where we, in working with your staff, has integrated those policies into our plans and the city plans, county plans, and we've been moving forward with a really good, strong, comprehensive investment package and getting the stuff done. Now we're trying to save our money for a couple of big projects. We'll also continue to lobby for state and federal funding, but frankly, it's difficult because of the competition we have. The other option that our board asked us to evaluate is what's called self-help. So what's a self-help county? Self-help counties are those that passed a ballot measure anywhere from 0.25% up to 0.5 cent. In LA County is 1 cent. Sales tax for transportation. 20 counties have passed these measures. They represent about 81% of California's population. So when you go down into the urban areas and you see freeway projects underway, it's being paid for out of these sales taxes. The state, on a good year, provides about $1 billion for betterments, for highway improvements. And now it's, again, this past year was $35 million statewide. Those self-help counties are raising $4.5 billion a year. It takes a lot of pressure off the legislature to do these betterments when you have this. But it puts counties like ours at a major disadvantage. So what does it mean to us? Local projects, local priorities, nobody can take it. Results in about $26 million a year. Half the revenues are would be, according to our analysis, paid by tourists and visitors. leverages state and federal funds. What's shown there is transparent, guaranteed expenditure plan. What the law would indicate, if anything goes forward on a ballot measure, you have an expenditure plan. It lays out precisely over the next 10 years or 20 years, whatever that term is, how are you going to spend the money? There's safeguards. Safeguards would be it has a sunset, it has annual audits, it has an oversight committee, much different than a general sales tax that a lot of the cities have passed. This is a special one. Special taxes require special safeguards. And it gives an opportunity to expedite project delivery, too. So where are we at right now? We've been making presentations like this to all the city councils, to various community groups, to various key stakeholders countywide, probably about 35 of them since August. We've now hired a consultant that is now doing more specific outreach. In January, they'll be meeting with four focus groups, one in the North Coast, the North County, Central, and South County. We are continuing this very active outreach program. In March, we're going to be doing more specific polling. And in April, we're going to come back to our board and say, here's the findings we have. One, the public is not interested. Move on. And, you know, we'll live within our means. Or two, the public seems to be interested. Continue to investigate putting together an expenditure plan. That requires a 67% vote of the people. It's a very, very strong threshold. That requires this expenditure plan. It lays it out. So what's important to you? And as one, do we move forward? Two, if so, how do we move forward? Do we spend it on street and road maintenance? Do we spend it on freeway interchanges? Or do we also expand public transit? Do this comprehensive approach, safe routes to school, transportation enhancements, creating more walkable communities. That's the kind of input we're having. So for yourselves, there's a website up here that ties into a monkey survey, so you can do your own survey and identify some of the input you have. That would then go into the system. We'll start tracking that. And that's okay for the public, the general public also. To start getting your input, provide that input to us so we can have a better idea on how we can move forward. So with that, I'll open it up to any questions you might have and or any thoughts that you might have and or anything that's really important to you. Thank you.
Are there questions from commissioners? Oh, okay, Mary Jean. Okay, so on the self-help issue, I know it's early on in the thinking about it and investigation. Any idea what kinds of things you would use that funding for?
I think that's what comes out. That's the purpose of some of this outreach. And where the focus groups and the outreach will help dictate what those packages would be. If it's consistent with our planning efforts, it's comprehensive. It's highways, mm-hmm. It's public transit, it's senior transportation, it's safe routes to school, it's environmental mitigation, and it's more walkable downtown, street enhancements, boardwalks, like the Moonstone Boardwalk, the boardwalk in Pismo Beach and Grover Beach, those kinds of projects. So that would be the comprehensive approach. Mm-hmm. That ties in with, you know, some of the policies that this commission's been trying to advocate, this creating more healthy communities. Alternately, you could just go straight street and road maintenance or just for the highway projects. But I would say, based upon how we've developed our plans, based upon input, I'm going to assume that our plans is based upon a lot of public information that we've had so far, that it'll be more of this more comprehensive, but that depends upon the kind of input we receive.
So in your focus groups, how wide of a spectrum of people are you having in the focus group?
We
are
have
you
not
getting
yet
seniors?
Had those, our consultants. They will have a, as I understand, be a wide range of ages, interest groups, broad-based, again, in each of the four sub-regions. And they'll be digging through this stuff in detail. And then we'll be doing public opinion surveys, telephone surveys, countywide, to try and get a good assessment of where the public is, too. And in the end, if we move forward, this will be going to our SLOCOG board in April. And it'll be up to that board then that decides, yes, we're going to move forward. They'll direct us to continue working this effort. We'll start developing an expenditure plan. As we develop an expenditure plan, that has to be reviewed and approved by each of the seven cities, with a majority of cities and a majority of population, and then it goes to the Board of Supervisors, who would then determine if it goes on the ballot. If it goes on the ballot, again, a 67% approval. And that would be aimed for November 2016, if they decided to go this year. Did you have a question here? Okay.
Commissioner Warren.
Yes. Thank you. This is very interesting. I have a kind of a pet peeve that has been going on for a long time around transportation, and I run into it regularly where I work, and it has to do with school districts and parents that think they every one of them has to drive their child to school and to pick them up. Are we looking at trying to change that? And I realize we may have to mandate parents if they're going to take their if their kids are going to go to public school, they may have to mandate to put them on a bus. But we've got all kinds of opportunities with new types of buses, not the old diesels, and different ways. We're trying to get poly students to ride the buses, and I'm just really frustrated. I brought this up with a parent that was complaining about the congestion in Templeton. And it's like, yeah, I've been there, done that. And it's always when they're taking kids or picking kids up from school, and it affects the whole community. And, you know, that parent's response was, oh, I know. It almost caused me to lose my job, and I had to get all three of my teenagers' cars. And it was like, wow, how environmentally conscious is this? And that's what I'd like to put out there.
You've raised a very, very good point. It's something
huge.
That we've realized has been an issue. There's funding at the state level and the federal level called Safe Ride to School. Our county, our board, and our staff has been working closely with the school districts on trying to secure some of those funds. I think we've received maybe 7 or 8 grants to enhance safe routes to various schools, Tascadero, San Luis Obispo, Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, and Oceano, I think are the main ones. Come to mind right off. In addition to that, we found that, yeah, we got some major congestion problems at every school. And it's what we found, and at various state and federal studies have found, there's a perception of safety. It's a perception that the roads aren't safe, that our kids aren't as safe as when we went to school, for instance. And frankly, the statistics show that it is safer. However, a lot of the schools are located further out. Many of the schools don't have really good sidewalk systems and bikeway systems. We received a grant from the state to do inventories around every single school, working with the various jurisdictions, trying to define and prioritize our improvements, and then use this funding to go after some of the Safe Route to School program funds. We've been generally successful, 1 or 2 projects a year, but with 75 schools, that takes a long time. So for instance, in this expenditure plan, if something went forward, we'd be testing to see, should there be a Safe Route to School program? And if so, should we be funding improvements to fund that inventory of really key priority needs? You mentioned also Cuesta College, Cal Poly, but same issue at Cuesta College. So we've been working with our transit systems to assure really good connections on a regional system as well as the local systems. In the case of Cal Poly has worked out free transit for all Cal Poly students as well as employees to Cal Poly. We would like to see advocating the same thing at Cuesta College, for instance. So it's a major effort. It's something we're tracking very closely. We have an active program going on at the same time when most of this funding is collapsing. So One thing I'm very interested in is if we do our polling, is safe route to school, access to school, is that going to rate well? And if so, then we'd be recommending develop some kind of a program that provide ongoing funding on an ongoing basis to address this. But not only just improvements, but our program has been working with each of the interested schools that then looks at working with the PTA, working with parents groups, working with the city or the county, working with the law enforcement officers, developing an overall program that addresses this perception, as well as providing. Once you develop programs, then you can also look at hardscape-related improvements. So it's a good point. We're addressing. We're trying to.
Any further questions from commissioners? Well, thank you very much. That was an interesting presentation. And once again, www.slocog.org, and take the survey.
Great. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
And I will now have Commissioner Campbell introduce our next speaker.
So our next speaker is Dave Abrecht, and before we start, he gets a hand for stepping in at the last minute. So we're very appreciative of that. He's going to talk primarily about bike safety. And if he has a little time, perhaps he can inform us about the difference between the bicycle organizations in the county. He's a very active member of the Bike Slow County, which is formerly the San Luis Obispo County Bicycle Coalition. Apparently they're the same thing, and the San Luis Bicycle Club. He's currently the bike club's vice president and is retired from a career in law enforcement, so he's still trying to keep us safe.
Well, good evening, and thank you very much for the opportunity to talk to you for a little bit about bicycling. Bicycling is a big deal in San Luis Obispo County. We have a lot of local riders who use bike for recreation and for commuting. We have a lot of tourist riders who come here for obvious reasons because of our beautiful county. And we have a lot of activities, organized rides, fundraising type rides that use our county as the basis for their ride. And in my time here and in my time on a bike, it all comes down sometimes to one issue, and that is safety. And how can we improve safety for all users of the roadway, not only cyclists, but pedestrians and for motorists. It's an honor to follow Ron, because Ron has been a champion for making sure that bikes and pedestrians don't get left out of the transportation mix. And he struggles with budgets, but he always makes sure that money somehow gets allocated to projects for trails, projects for walking, as well as for highways. Let me talk a little bit, let me get the boring stuff out of the way. The California Vehicle Code has stated that rules of the road apply to bicycles. And the Vehicle Code also mandates that bicycles ride as far to the right as practical. So in other words, if you have a bike lane, something like that, that's not really an issue, but on a road with no bike lane, then it becomes a little bit more difficult, but bicyclists are generally supposed to ride as far to the right as practical. There are exceptions to that rule. When they're overtaking another vehicle or passing another vehicle, when they're preparing to make a left turn, when they need to avoid a hazard such as glass or rocks or a rut or construction, or when they're approaching an area where there's a right turn only lane, they have a right to move out into the lane away from that right turn only lane. When traveling on a one-way street, or when they're moving with the speed of traffic, such as downtown San Luis Obispo. Most bikes travel about the same speed as cars on the downtown San Luis Obispo. So they're entitled to take the lane, be in the middle of the lane. The vehicle code also permits bicycles to leave the lane, but they have to do it with reason, reasonable safety, and an appropriate signal. I think every one of us here in this room have seen a bicyclist make a sudden move right in front of a car. And again, bicyclists are supposed to look, signal, make that movement in safety. And then there's another vehicle code section that prohibits vehicles from driving in the bicycle lane. So these are just some of the general vehicle codes, but the important thing to remember is that bicyclists are authorized by the vehicle code to be on the roadway. So this would be an example of a bicycle in a left turn. A cyclist wanting to make a left turn needs to safely move into the left turn lane and follow just as though they were a vehicle. Bicyclists are allowed to move into the lane in a construction zone. There's no requirement that bicyclists have to ride through that mess. They're allowed to move into the lane and follow the lane of traffic around a construction zone or a hazardous zone. Substandard lane width. This is a huge issue in our county because we have so many rural roads that do not have bike lanes. But a bicyclist is allowed to be in the lane of traffic when the lane cannot handle a bike and a car side by side. Does that make sense? So if a bicycle, this is State Park Road going into Morro Bay State Park, and these bicyclists are all riding as far to the right as possible, but you can tell there's not enough room for a car to get by them without crossing over the double yellow line. Bicyclists have the right to be there. Motorists are supposed to wait until it is safe to pass. Now, we all know that motorists are going to cross that double yellow line. They do it all the time. They do it in their own peril, that they could have a head-on collision with a car coming around the corner. So it's a kind of a tricky issue. But generally, the motorists should wait until they've got enough room to safely pass the bicyclists. There's also a little-used vehicle code that cyclists, if five or more cars stack up behind you, then cyclists should find a way to pull out and let traffic go by. And it's that law is general for slow-moving cars, but it could be sometimes the CHP will apply it to bicyclists. And we'll talk a little bit more about substandard lane width and the three-foot passing law a little bit later. Another issue is right-turn conflict. And this is an area where bicyclists, probably the greatest peril to cyclists, is the collision where a car is turning right and a bicyclist is going straight. And this is the intersection right outside of Costco, Froom Ranch Road and Los Osos Valley Road. There is a bike lane, but there is no separation between the bike lane and the travel lane when you get down to the intersection. So in this case, what happens, you can imagine a bicyclist going straight, the car is turning right, and it's called a right hook collision. Again, the most common collision between cars and bicyclists. And the unfortunate part is the car may suffer a dented fender and the bicyclist has serious injuries. So what to do? For bicyclists, they need to have the confidence to what we call occupy the lane. They need to safely move out into that lane around the car making the right turn. And again, I stress the word safely because you can't just dart out into traffic. You need to look, signal, and then move out into the lane as though you were a motor vehicle. I can honestly say that in riding this area and riding any area where you've had a fear of a right turn conflict, if I look, make eye contact with the motorist behind me, signal, and then move out into the lane, I've never, ever had a motorist be angry, as long as I'm predictable and visible making that move. Another collision is a left hook. This one, a bicyclist going straight, a car going straight. The motorist making the left turn just simply doesn't see the bicyclist, waits for the car to pass through, doesn't see the bicyclist in the lane, and we have a collision. Again, the burden, the motorist is at fault, but the bicyclist has a burden to really be predictable, visible, try to establish eye contact with that driver making the left turn so that you can have some reasonable assurance that that driver sees you going through the intersection. Lane directional markings, bicyclists are supposed to follow them. How often have you seen a bicyclist in the right turn lane all of a sudden make a left turn? That bicyclist should pick the lane that they want, depending on which direction they want to go. Again, downtown San Luis Obispo, the bicyclist should look and safely move into one of the lanes wherever, depending on the direction they want to proceed. Let's talk a little bit about bike lanes. Ron mentioned bike lanes in his funding presentation. There are four different kinds of bike lanes throughout the state of California. Class one lanes are the trails that we talked about. Class two lanes are on the roadway. Class three lane is just the road with no lane. And class four lane is new. It's what's called a protected bike lane. And I'll show you a few examples of each one. This would be a class one lane or a class one path. This is the Bob Jones Trail that was just recently completed by the city of San Luis Obispo that connects Prado Road with Los Osos Valley Road. And again, a class one trail is a trail that's off the roadway, separated from vehicles, and limited to bicycles and pedestrians, and skateboarders, and stroller moms, and dog walkers. Everybody gets to use these class one trails. And so we have to learn to coexist on those as well. Right now, and Ron talked about this, there are a number of multi-use trail projects in the county. The county section of the Bob Jones Trail was approved. That's the section of the trail from the Octagon Barn down to the Ontario Road trailhead. That trail has yet to be built, but it has been, the environmental impact report, the EIR, has been approved. And the county is now figuring out how to acquire the necessary land to build that trail. The Bob Jones City Trail is being worked on from downtown out to Los Osos Valley Road and then on to the Octagon Barn. The only stretch we have right now really is from Prado Road to Los Osos Valley Road. The other two stretches are being developed. These other trails are all in some various stage of the development process. The Railroad Safety Trail, as Ron mentioned, just received active transportation funding from the state of California to build another section of that trail that connects San Luis Obispo with Cal Poly. The De Anza Trail, the Salinas River Trail, the Chorro Valley Trail, North Coast Trail are all, again, in process of being developed. And the key issue in all of these things is funding to be able to build these trails. Another exciting thing, though, is the Octagon Barn Center is going to be opened this year. The Octagon Barn is being developed as a public venue along with a trailhead center on the property. And the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County is responsible for that project. They are doing the fundraising. They are doing all of the work on that project. And what I'm proud to say is that the San Luis Obispo Bicycle Club recently gave $30,000 and another matching amount of $10,000 towards the trailhead center at the Octagon Barn Center. So we hope that's going to be a place where cyclists can rest, get maybe a drink of water, a bite to eat, meet, leave for their rides, or finish their rides at this particular location. And we think when this is built, it's going to be an incredible venue for cycling throughout our county. This will be a class two lane. I digressed a little bit on trails because I was told that somebody wanted to hear about trails, so my apologies. But this is a class two lane. It's basically a painted lane on the roadway. This is Quintana Road in Morro Bay. You see these all over town, and class two lanes have to meet certain statewide criteria in the way they're designed. Class 3 lanes are basically no lane at all. It's the road. And this is a rural road in one of the canyons in Morro Bay. And as you notice, these cyclists are riding side by side. They're not riding, one in front of the other. Cyclists can take the entire road. But when a car comes up, their responsibility is to move over so that both cyclists are riding as far to the right as practical. This is a real problem in San Luis Obispo County. Probably the biggest complaint we get at the bike club, through the highway patrol, and through other groups is cyclists failing to move over. So this is something we need to work on. It's a nonstop effort to educate cyclists to move over when there's oncoming traffic, and educate motorists that cyclists do have the right to the road until that vehicle approaches. The 3-foot passing law, I just mentioned it briefly before, was passed in October of 2014. It requires motorists to give cyclists 3 feet of clearance when they pass. In a bike lane, it's not a big problem, but on a Class 3 road where you have a narrow road, then it becomes an issue. And again, the idea is that cyclists need to move to far to the right as possible, and motorists need to slow down and then pass when it's safe to do so. Motorists are not legally allowed to cross over the double yellow to give that 3 feet, but they do. So that's another issue that everybody else has to, we have to contend with. This is the newest type of bike lane. It's called a buffered or protected lane. And when I took this picture, we didn't have any buffered lanes in San Luis Obispo County. This one is taken in Buellton, north of Santa Barbara. But this is the latest concept in infrastructure for bike safety, is to have an extra bit of paint, or it could be concrete, or it could be plants, or it could be bollards, but an extra buffer that protects the cyclist from traffic. Now, we do have our buffered bike lanes in San Luis Obispo County now. This is in Los Osos. The county recently removed all parking from downtown Los Osos on LOVR, as we call it, and widened the bike lane and put in this buffered lane, which is a double stripe, a little bit extra protection for the cyclists traveling through Los Osos Valley, or through Los Osos. In fact, tomorrow night I'm going to a meeting because there's one person who is very unhappy that he can't park at the curb and run to the ATM anymore. So we're going to have to, we'll deal with that issue as it comes up. Let's talk a little bit about sharrows, green lanes, and roundabouts. A sharrow is just a paint in the roadway that lets motorists know that cyclists have, again, a right to be in the lane. There's not enough room on these streets for a bike and a car to be side by side. So the sharrow lets motorists know that to expect to see bicyclists on this road. This is in downtown San Luis Obispo. They are using sharrows quite a bit on some of the narrow roads. The sharrow on the right was recently installed, and it's called a green-backed sharrow for obvious reasons. And it just gives it a little more visibility for motorists. This is what's called a green lane. These are also becoming very popular. This is on California Street, just south of Cal Poly. Green lanes are used to kind of alert everyone, cyclists and motorists alike, that hey, there's cyclists in this area. So when you make your right turn or when you come off the freeway, just be a little extra cautious, because this is an area where there's a lot of bicycle traffic. Los Osos, again, the county just put in a green lane at the intersection of Los Osos Valley Road and 9th Street. This green lane kind of cuts across the right turn only lane so that motorists, if they see a bicyclist, ideally the cyclist follows the green lane, and the motorist knows to expect the possibility of cyclists cutting across that lane as they try to get out of the right turn only lane. Roundabouts, another concept that's becoming more and more popular. You're going to see more roundabouts. Caltrans is putting roundabouts on highways for on and off ramps. This is a roundabout in Morro Bay. It becomes a little bit of a challenge. Motorists find roundabouts a challenge, and you can imagine that cyclists too also. But again, cyclists have the right to move into the queue of traffic just like a vehicle. So if you're approaching a roundabout and you see a car positioned there, that car has the right-of-way. If that car were a bike, that bike would have the right-of-way. And as you as a driver would yield until it's clear to work your way into the roundabout. My wife hates them. I think they're actually pretty cool, but there's something that we're all learning to live with. Last thing I want to talk about that's kind of a serious note is distracted driving. And this is probably the biggest challenge that we all face on our roadways today. And it just frustrates me to watch car commercial after car commercial, and now they're talking about how you got your Wi-Fi in the car and you can text, you know, over your Wi-Fi, and it's just, I don't know where it's going to go, but I do know that what's leading to is more and more distracted driving. There are laws against distracted driving. You're required to use a cell phone hands-free. You cannot text on your device. Cell phone use by people under 18 is prohibited. And the last thing has to do with earbuds. How many drivers do you see these days with earbuds in both ears while they're driving? The law does not allow that. You can wear one earbud, and the law applies to cyclists as well. Cyclists are limited to one earbud when they're riding their bike. Preferably, they wear it in their right ear so they can hear a little bit what's going on in their left ear as cars are passing. So, I hope I didn't scare you. Cycling is actually really, really, really fun. But if you're thinking about getting on a bike, just to ride to the store or just to ride with your kids or grandkids, if you're thinking about biking as a recreational activity and you're a little concerned, maybe it's been a while since you've been on a bike, Bike Slow County, which used to be called the San Luis Obispo County Bicycle Coalition, offers free street cycling classes. I took it when we first moved to San Luis Obispo County. It had been a while since I had ridden a bike. It makes a wonderful difference in terms of improving your confidence out there on the roadway. I would encourage anybody who's interested in getting back on a bike and riding on the street to pursue the class. And lastly, again, I can't emphasize enough the joy of riding a bike. The picture on my left is my 3-year-old grandson. We gave him this little balance bike before he was born. He loves it, and he's learning how to ride a bike. The person on the right is 82-year-old Joan Peterson. She's a member of the bike club. Joan just logged 100,000 miles on her bike since the year 2000. And she still rides. So my point is, it's a lifelong thing that you can do, you can enjoy, and since this group is committed to our healthy community, it's something that improves the overall health of that community. So, thank you very much for your attention, and happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Well, thank you. Are there questions from commissioners? Well, you were very thorough, as we have no questions, but we certainly enjoyed your presentation. It was very interesting.
Good.
And some of us ride bicycles. I know Commissioner Campbell is a pretty avid bicycle rider. Some of us avoid them. But it's a great sport, and thank you very much.
You're very welcome. And if you folks are members of groups that you think might benefit by having a little bit of more information about riding bikes in our county, feel free to let me know. I'm happy to make this presentation again and again.
Thank you very much. All right, moving along with our agenda this evening. The next item is Dr. Bornstein with our health agency public health report.
Good evening. So I just have a few announcements, as per usual. One that I know at least one commissioner who probably knows this and will be excited to hear me say it publicly is our Healthy Communities Work Group was awarded for 2015, the Green Award from the Central Coast Green Building Council. We put that out as a press release today as well, but they remarked on our efforts to get involved with planning and development of enhanced health in considerations of development projects in our community. So congratulations to Commissioner Sage and everyone else who's on that committee. Secondly, we received a small grant today from from Justin Winery, who is they actually do some measure of philanthropy, and we were the recipient of a small grant to enhance our nurse family partnership, which is a nurse model of doing home visiting and support of pregnancy and early child development. And so this grant will enable us to send new staff to a several day training to get the curriculum under their belt. Next item is to tell you, and this is very exciting news, I didn't know that it would happen as quickly as it did, but we have received proposals for Public Health to develop its electronic health record system, and those proposals have been reviewed and vetted, and a notice of intent to award went out to one of the vendors. So we are moving on the hoped-for timeline, and hopefully we will have a contract in place in a couple of months and begin our implementation efforts. And I know I'm looking at Commissioner Grantham, who's been down that road, and definitely staff are both excited and nervous, but it really is time for us to enter the modern age, so we're moving forward with that. Another sort of pat on the back I want to give to some of our staff is, I know you heard earlier in the year from our EMS Interim Director, Kathy Collins, about some of the efforts around supporting of community-based CPR, and I have some numbers now to share, which are fairly remarkable. So in 2015, we our staff and volunteers provided training for hands-only CPR to 2,500-plus individuals in our community. And we implemented high-performance CPR to first responders, which is somewhat different. It's a model in which everything is orchestrated and choreographed such that the response rates of return to circulation and back to full functioning of individuals who've experienced a cardiac arrest in general lives at around the 8% range for people who have a cardiac arrest, witnessed or otherwise. With this high-performance CPR, it often goes up as high as 50%. This is really anecdote, so don't quote me on the statistics, but the first five saves since implementation in Slo City, four of them achieved full recovery. So apparently it works, but that's a very small number, so the epidemiologist would have my head for trying to pretend that that was a real statistic. But in general, we're very excited about the fact that we are now amongst a small group of jurisdictions that are really moving forward very aggressively with this methodology for CPR and saves of lives with this organized approach to CPR. And lastly, something that has been occupying my attention and has come before the commission before, tomorrow there will be a presentation at the Board of Supervisors on the where we are in the process of developing a permanent ordinance and EIR for biosolids. So I know that presentation will be well attended, and we have we, Environmental Health, and the Planning Department have reviewed a number of comments that have come in from stakeholders and the general public in response, and are going through that. And with further board direction tomorrow, will either continue on the trajectory we're on or be advised to either modify or change direction in some fashion. This has been an issue that's been intermittently in the public's eye, and I say intermittent. Every 2 to 4 years, something happens, either an extension of the existing interim ordinance, or if we go back far enough, starting in 1998, the Health Commission Task Force, another couple of years later, another task force, another couple of years later, the interim ordinance, and then it's been extended 3 times at 4-year intervals since then. So I and my staff especially, who have worked on this over the low 16 years, are hoping that we can come out at the end of the process, no pun intended, with something final, or at least final for the moment. Technology advances, and certainly, you know, no ordinance lives in stone forever, but that's, you know, where we are in that process. I thought I should report back to you. And that's my report.
We have questions for Dr. Bornstein.
Dr. Bornstein, the hands-only CPR, is instruction in that given on an ongoing basis anyplace? Or even a regularly scheduled?
I'm not certain that I have a good answer to that, but I will definitely get you one. As far as I know, I do know, actually, I think Thursday night farmers market in SLO, that there is a presence there.
Do you have to sign up for it, you know? Or?
I don't believe so. I think passersby can take advantage. Right. I know that we have worked with some schools. I know that lots of community events and opportunities, but I don't know if there's per se an annual calendar and locations, but I'll get you an answer on that.
Go ahead.
Dr. Bornstein, I know there's been a bit of media lately on water well testing out by the airport, and if I understand it correctly from the articles I'm reading, we've got the county doing some testing on their own, and then Water Quality Control Board doing some testing. And it's just a little aside, apparently a law firm. But the question I had more about the government entities, is there a lead agency in this, or are they just completely operating independently?
No. So thank you for the question, and I'm happy to clarify. So the Regional Water Board is the responsible entity for identification of a source of contaminant in drinking water. And what's unusual in this situation, as I have come to learn from the Water Board, is it is quite uncommon, or at least in our region, they can't cite another case where there was no obvious responsible party for the exposure. So the Water Board is responsible for investigating source material, for providing for testing for affected businesses and residences, for providing for treatment as necessary. But typically they do all that work based on recapturing the expenses from the responsible party. So what has happened in this situation and how the county got involved, because we do not regulate, we have no purview over individual wells, only small water systems. This particular situation emerged recently from a resident complaint of an odor. And that led, we do respond to nuisance complaints. So our staff went out to investigate that, and as part of the investigation, took a sample of that one well, which came back positive for TCE, which is trichloroethylene. We reported that to the State Water Board, and they began to plan for, next steps. together with them, because we have staff and they had no funding source, we made ourselves available to provide for some additional testing to see if they could find the scope of the problem. And so we did the next round of testing, and then when it became clear that it was beyond a single property, the Water Board has provided the opportunity for the entire neighborhood community to be tested, and they provided the testing while we continued to provide the staffing to obtain the samples. I hope that's where we're at.
So is there a process in place where a local rural landowner could request an environmental health test their water, especially if they had a, as you labeled it, nuisance concern? So we're just talking one landowner.
Typically what we recommend is all well owners test their water on some periodicity. Mm-hmm. That an annual test is a good idea. We don't regulate, we don't mandate it, and we in most cases are not in a position to even provide that service absent some obvious reason that might be impacting someone's health. So that's a mixed answer, but in general, if suddenly landowner said, hey, I wonder if I've got a problem in my well, just globally in the county, we would give them resources for them to go and have their own wells tested.
So that'd be like a referral basis.
Yep.
Someone else the other side of the county goes, oh, I didn't know you test water. That's great. It doesn't really work that way.
No. But there are in this community that is under investigation. Additional information is being collected. We do regulate some small water systems, which are well connections of 4 or greater, up to 200. So we have been involved in the testing of those facilities and ongoing.
Super. Thanks.
Any other questions? Well, thank you very much, Dr. Bornstein. As usual, a very interesting report about what's going on. Congratulations on all the good news. And we'll move to the Health Commissioner updates. I'd like to start with Commissioner Sage, and you can move that way. Move to the right.
Okay, so I will certainly support Dr. Bornstein in congratulating Kathleen Carley for all her hard work with the Healthy Communities group. It was delightful to receive the award, and maybe next time Kathleen is here, we can recognize her in some way for all her hard work. She is energetic and a go-getter. I don't know how she does it. That committee continues to meet monthly, reviewing some of the plans that are brought before us from a health perspective. We're in the process of developing a little checklist so that we can look at plans in a perspective of the same way for each and every plan, assigning a point system to it and so forth. So as that gets finalized, I'll bring it before everyone to have a look at and see exactly what we're doing there. It is that time of year when the community-based organization and preventive health grant applications will be received. The call for applications went out in December. They're due back to the county administrator's office the end of January. At that point, Commissioner Klaus and I, with the other committee members, will start to review those applications. We'll make our funding recommendations, and then the funding will actually be done in June at the time the Board of Supervisors have their budget hearing, but that process is beginning. The Intimate Partner Violence Coalition, because we only meet every other month or so, and in our last meeting we had to reschedule for some reason, I can't remember why, but anyway, What I did want to let you know, because I know that many of us know her, and she's been before the commission a number of times, Beth Robb, who is with the San Luis Obispo Women's Shelter, is leaving her position there and taking another position in the community. But she has been a wonderful advocate for that organization, and I'm sure she'll be missed.
No report.
I have no report for this month.
Then let's move to my left.
I really don't have a report because I did not attend the Adult Services Policy Council meeting, but they did submit their annual report 14-15, so that is public knowledge and access. And we do have a large increase in our senior population over the last 10 years, 29%. So that's something to keep in mind when we do look at our community.
No report this month.
On December 9th, the staff from the Tobacco Control Program conducted a sting in Pismo Beach using a youth decoy. The operation covered 17 stores in the city of Pismo Beach. Four of those stores sold to minors. One of the stores that sold to minors was a vape shop, and a total of four citations for violation of state law were given out.
I join the Commission on Aging every month that they have their meeting, and the SLO County Commission on Aging meets at the San Luis Obispo Veterans Center. And they're meeting this Friday from 10 to 12. In the Emergency Operations Center for the county, the director is Ron Alsop, and he'll be explaining during that meeting how the different emergency responder organizations that we have throughout the county, that includes Diablo Canyon, how they all coordinate their efforts, and some more probably very interesting insights. He's quite a prolific speaker on this topic, so I encourage anybody interested to be there again at the Veterans Hall in San Luis Obispo Friday at 10.
Well, it appears we've covered all the commissioners. We have committee reports. Are there any committee reports? Nominating committee, perhaps?
I'm pleased to say that we have some applicants for our vacancy on the commission. And so by the end of this month, the nominating committee will do some interviews, and hopefully we can bring some results to you soon.
Wonderful. Any other committees met during December? Not likely. So we're down to prospective future items. I think next month we'll be maybe hearing from the Oral Health Coalition. Commissioner Grantham had spoken to someone at a meeting about that. So the focus will be on oral health. Any other comments about that from commissioners? Then the next item on our agenda is the adjournment. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you all very much.